Shalom and good evening from Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Tonight, as we began Masechet Shkalim, we will give a share once again on the reality of Masechet Shkalim, the time of the year and the place where it all takes place. Masechet Shkalim comes after Pesachim. I think the Rambam in Parashat Mishnah already says the connection is clear. The two are actually together because Shkalim is actually dealing with the preparations for the coming of the Olah Regel and Mak of the Korban Pesach. So we have to keep in mind that for the Korban Pesach, as the Gemara says in the sixth parak of Pesachim, they one time counted the amount of Pesachim that there were in that Kiflaim Kiyaretz in Mitzrayim, 1,200,000 Pesachim. And that is, each Korban Pesach is a minimum of 10 people who eat from it, so we're talking about 12 million people. Even if we'll say this is an exaggeration, it's still an astounding amount of people that are coming. And they're coming from all over the place, from close and from far, and the preparations have to begin a month in advance in order to accommodate all those people who are coming. For example, one of the reasons given today, we have a set calendar, we know when there will be a leap year, but in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, it was decided by Beis Din at the time if it warranted a leap year for whatever reason. And one of the reasons that can warrant a leap year is a Goyish Akum and Koma Vlahigil. If people left Bavo and they're on the way to Eretz Yisrael and they're not able to come because the bridges are washed out or something like that, so that's a reason to make a leap year. The Rambam says, because if not, we're not going to make a leap year, we're going to be left in one or two situations. Either the people won't come and that prevents them from coming, or the people would endanger their lives to cross the swollen rivers because there are no bridges. So we see the accommodations begin from a long time before, before Pesach, in order to accommodate all those that will be coming. We'll soon try to figure out, we hope time will permit to try to figure out how long it actually took for the people to come from where they came. But the Mishnah tells us that on the first of all, they make a declaration for the people to bring the shkolim, and they announce the halachas of the kilayim, because now the crops start sprouting. So, if a person, when his field starts growing, he sees in the field other species which he didn't plant that grew there, so then he's got to uproot them. Okay, the Megillah is not so relevant for us. Now, umdaknim as a drachim, v'sarachobos, v'sumkras hamayim. And they fix up the roads, the streets, and the mikvahs. V'osim kol tzorkei rabim, they do all that's needed for the rabim, for the public, v'mitzayinim as a kvaras, v'yotzim avol kilayim. They mark the kvaras, and in other words, they mark the place where the kvaras are so that people should see, and they shouldn't become tummy as they're coming to Yerushalayim. V'yotzim avol kilayim, they go out to uproot the kilayim that has already begun to grow. That's what the Mishnah tells us. Although the Mishnah doesn't tell us directly, but Brachot Bad Mashmir Mal Shkolim, they declare the Shkolim, but the Shkolim was an issue of contention between the Purushim and the Tzedukim, the two major groups that were around during the second Beis HaMikdash. And for that, we have our Hebrew source, page source number one, the beginning of it, we quote a Gemara from Menachos. The Gemara Menachos Samachay, Amar Aleph, tells like this, Mereish Echad Nisan, this is a quote from Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus is a list of the days that were declared Yom Tovim for Klal Yisrael because good things happened to them. It could have been good things when they won wars, good things they built walls around Yerushalayim, or good things is that they defeated the Tzedukim in their debates over how to interpret the certain Pesukim. So, Merei Shachat HaNisan Latman Yubei, from the first day of Nisan until the eighth day of Nisan, Itokam Tmida. The Tmida was established, and therefore it's a holiday, the little mistake, you're not allowed to eulogize. Why was the issue? That for 8 days they dealt and discussed the issue. What was the issue? Should Tzedukim Amrim, Yachad Misnadev, who may be Tumit. The Tzedukim used to say that an individual can bring the carbon Tumit. If an individual wants to come, the carbon Tumit is carved every morning and every evening. And if an individual wants to come and be mark of Korban Tumah, he can bring his own sheep, his own lamb rather, and be mark of it. My Dorish, what were they Dorish? As a kevas haracha tasa baboker, as a kevas hashening tasa ben abayim. The pasuk says it like in singular term. You should do as a kevas haracha tasa baboker. You should do the kevas, and I was implying that an individual can do it. Maya haju, what did they answer back? As karboni lachmi leishai tishmeru. You should be shomer, you should be careful to bring this carbon, shukulam barim tumas alishko, that they all come from the tumas alishko and not from an individual person. So this is the Gemara Menachos, and the Gemara Menachos is just quoting part of Megillas Tainis, but not really going in depth into what's really going on here. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually read from Megillas Tainis, and for your convenience, link number 2 has a text from Megillas Tainis, from the site Shechem.org, and it's actually a photostat of the Sefer, so it's you may have to scroll down as you go, but the text is there, and I'm going to read from Megillas Tainis, and then we'll understand what's really going on behind this. Hirenu Maya, this Sefer here, Megillas Tainis, as you can see I'm holding up, and it's available, recently reprinted. Hirenu Maya, the lowest on our behold. These days that you're not allowed to fast, and fast of the little misfit behind, and some of them that you're not allowed to eulogize. Reishachad and Nisan, this is what we mentioned before. And by the way, all these Yom Tovim, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says they are batel, they don't apply today. The only two remaining Yom Tovim from the Gilastinus are Hanukkah and Purim. But all others, when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, all these Yom Tovim are no longer applicable, they're no longer Yom Tovim. Okay, Mireishachad and Nisan, that's my new bay from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the 8th day, you talk of Tmidah. The Tmidah was established a little misfit. And this is a quote that we saw in the Gemara, Shadzukim Omer, Mevi'in Tmidim Shal Yachid. Tzukim would say that you can bring Tmidim from a Yachid, from an individual. Then maybe Shabbos Echot, then maybe Shteisha Basis. This guy can bring for 1 week, this guy can bring for 2, then maybe Shloshim Yom, and this guy can bring for 30 days. But my Adarshim, what was their source for this? Amokasuv Atara, it says in the Torah. As a Kevas Echot Ta'asa Baboka. The Yachid Mashma, the Torah is talking to an individual. Ta'asa, you should do. Amram Chachamim, so Chachamim answered, they replied to them, you're not allowed to do that. Why? If you ain't carbon tzibur, a carbon tzibur can only come from money that collects with moral life. So Shanemah says, Tavis bin Yisrael, Karbani Zadam, Lachme Lachalav, Misha Zaktor, Shrev Zolavonar, Nichochel and Sachim, it's a whole list of these Karbanas. Tishmeru in plural, that all of them come from the Tumas Alishka, from what's collected in the Shkola. Now here the Megillas Tainis continues. Rabbi Kiva Omer. Okay, this is so important for us, but we'll say it anyway. Rabbi Kiva Omer, how do I know that when you buy the carbon tumit, you can't just let it go and pasture wherever it is? Talmud Lomar says, Tishmeru lakavli b'ma'ado. Just like the Korban Pesach, you have to prepare from the 10th of Nisan, and for 4 days you have to check and inspect it that there's no mum and guard it. Likewise, the Korban Tumah, you also have to guard for 4 days, and that's why in the Beis Hamokdash there was a special room called Lishkas Hatlaim, where they actually kept these the lambs ready for Shechita for Korban Tumah. They kept them on the watch. This is the important thing that we want to get to. And when the Purushim were victorious and they showed the Tzedukim that they were wrong, they made a tekona that everyone has got to bring their shekel, and they put them in that chamber where the money is collected. But Tamidim created Mishal Tzibur, and from then on the Tamidim came from Korban Tzibur, because also Nayamim Shadana Masalm Yom Tov, and all those days that they were debating and discussing the issue back and forth for 8 days, they made those 8 days Yom Tov. So we see from the Megillas Tainis a very interesting thing. The issue is not just can an individual bring Korban Tumah. The issue is much deeper. The issue is there a concept of bringing Machzor Shekel or not? According to the Tanukim, there's no purpose in Machzor Shekel. Because when it comes to Korban Tzibur, an individual will donate. Who wouldn't want to be that individual to donate? One guy brings for a week, for 2 weeks, for a month. Plenty of people will want to be the person to bring that Korban Tumah. So no shortage. So the Tzedukim did not believe the concept of Machzor Shekel totally. There's no need for it. There's no need for Tumas Alishka. While the Purushim insisted yes. Now, first I want to mention that the Maskilim who took this Megillas Tainis literally were under the impression that until then there was no idea of Machtes HaShekel, because it says it's Kinu Shushokim Shikleya. So until then there was an invention that was made by the Prushim. This is of course incorrect. Isaac Alevi and Doros HaShonim has a whole arichas on it. Unfortunately I don't have it available now, but I just can quote to you in the Hebrew source page. We have Tzukim over here from Nechemia. Nechemia was way long before this whole confrontation between the Tzukim and the Pushim. And then Nechemia states clearly, this is the third section on the Hebrew source page, V'amadna leinu mitzvos v'aseis aleinu shlishis ha-shekel b'shana. We put upon ourselves a mitzvah to give a third of a shekel per year, la'avodah b'seis elokeinu, in order for the avodah b'seis hamikdash. What is this money going to be used for? L'lechem ha-marechis, for the bread and the lechem ha-panim. Umilcha satomit, and the milcha that comes with the carbon tamid, with the ola satomit, and the ola, that the carbon tamid, and the shabbosis, and the chadashim, and the moadim, and all, with all the carbon tzibur, we collected money that everyone contributed, that money for the Shumas HaLishka. So we see that even in the days of Nechemia, this mitzvah existed. Could be the Midrash Tainis is saying, maybe for a while when the Tzedukim were actually controlling the Sanhedrin, and it definitely was a period like that, so this had stopped, and now they make a takana to rebring it. But definitely it's not an invention, a new invention. A very interesting document from the other side, we quoted the story of the Prushim. In Dead Sea Scrolls, which warrants a whole lecture on itself, but the Dead Sea Scrolls, one of the scrolls found is known as the Temple Scroll. The Temple Scroll has a whole history in itself. It was discovered and smuggled to Beit Lechem, and eventually when Israel captured Beit Lechem in the Six-Day War, they got a hold of it. The Temple Scroll is actually the largest scroll that was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, 8 meters long, and one of the most fascinating. Yigeli, the archaeologist, sat with Professor Saul Lieberman in New York for a whole year to explain him exactly what's behind it, and he published three beautiful volumes explaining not only the text but in depth the meaning, etc. Yigeli Adin and Professor Lieberman at the time already leaned towards the idea that this document is a Tzeduki document, but they were missing the compelling evidence. The compelling evidence that the Dead Sea Scrolls are Tzeduki documents, not like what was previously thought as we've seen, but much more Tzeduki, and recently a professor from Bar-Ilan also published a book on the subject showing the connection with the Karaites, which and the Dead Sea Scrolls, which the Rambam says the Karaim are a continuation of the Tzedukim. So we have over here evidence. We're talking about a Tzeduki document. One of the later documents published is known as Mitzat Maaseh Torah, which clearly is a Tzeduki document, and there are a lot of parallels between that document and the Temple Scroll. So here I have a smaller publication of the Temple Scroll, which I have the text. The text is available online on the source page. On the source page number 9, text from Temple Scroll. I apologize that it's been scanned in, it's a little large, but it's there, and for your convenience. And this is where I'm reading from, column 39 on the I'm reading from column 39 in what's known as the Temple Scroll. The Temple Scroll is a very interesting document, as I said. It's the largest document found. A lot of it deals, it gets its name the Temple Scroll because a lot of it deals with halachas of the Beis HaMikdash. And although not only, it has a lot of other interesting things, and still being studied to this very day, discovering very interesting things. But there are a few, at least four or five things in this Temple Scroll which show us that we're talking about a Tzeduki document, and in my opinion, here's another case. Reading column 39, starting from line 4. Kol Kahal Adas Yisrael V'Ager She'Yivaled B'Socho. Anyone from Kahal Adas Yisrael and the Ger which is born from them, in other words, the Ger from the fourth generation. Why the fourth generation? So this document explains when it says that Kahal Hashem, Kahal Hashem doesn't mean marrying into Kahal Yisrael, but Kahal Hashem means coming into the Beis HaMikdash. And we know it says Vayamad Yoshafat stood with Kahal Hashem. So we see the term Kahal Hashem applying to the Mikdash, and they applied the din of Lo'yavor B'Kahal Hashem to the Mikdash. So when the fourth generation and on, it says like this. When they come to bow down, call out that's from Israel. A woman or a kid should not come Ad Yom HaShashlim Chok Alumot, until he completes his laws, V'nosan Pidyonav Shal Hashem Machtis HaShekel, and he gives the Machtis HaShekel his Zikaron, V'moshu HaSeheimah Asum Ger HaShekel, and it says how much the Shekel is to when he Ger HaShekel. So if we talk about Machtis HaShekel, now the main, when we have, for example, Pashas Kolam, so what do we read for Pashas Kolam? So indeed, it's a Machlokas in Maseches Megillah. We know what we read. We read Pashas Kisisa. But in Maseches Megillah, there's a machlokas between, there's a machlokas whether what should be read for Pashas Kolam is Kisisa, or what should be read is Tzavet Mei Yisos, Kabani Lach Mei Yishai. Because if we read Kisisa, Kisisa tells us about Machtis HaShekel, but what's it talking about? It's talking about the Machtis HaShekel for the Mishkan. That was a thing that happened on a one-time basis. That's not a thing that happened on every on a yearly basis. And that's why the one who holds that you read from Kabani Lachmi has a problem with reading Kisisa, because Kisisa doesn't tell us that every year you have to bring the Shekel. Only it's Kabani Lachmi, that Pasuk, which the Purushim proved that you have to bring Korbanos, that you have to bring them in Tumas Alishka, there's where you have a concept of Tumas Alishka, but from Kisisa you don't have. So the Tzedukim took the Pasuk in Kisisa, which talks about Machtis HaShekel, and they said it's not talking about Korbanos. Machtis HaShekel is a thing you give, a one time thing, and that's it, and you're fine. And that's exactly what it says over here in the Temple Scroll, which is a Tzeduki document. There's no need for a yearly basis of Machtis HaShekel. The Machtis HaShekel is a thing that only comes once in a lifetime. Just like then, they gave it once and that was it. So, the announcement for the Shekel, it doesn't say this directly, but I believe also it's not just to announce it so that people should remember, but it's a thing of to remind people to go out against it. That you don't bring Machtis HaShekel. That was the purpose, to be Machtis on it a month in advance, that everyone should know that you have to bring the Machtis HaShekel. So the Machtis HaShekel is the preparations, of course, has got to begin so that by the time Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes, as the Gemara says, that's when you already bring the korbanos from the new Machtis HaShekel. So it's a month of preparation. Okay, next, what do we have? We have the drachim, the rechavos, the kibbutz hamayim, all these things that tachei rabim which are prepared. A little about the roads. Unfortunately, I don't have a good map to show you, but this is going to take us into the next subject, which we're going to talk about: the roads leading up to Yerushalayim. People came to Viola Rego in the second Beis Hamikdash, all the way from Bavel. They came to Viola Rego from Egypt. They came from Greece. Jews were already scattered around the whole Mediterranean, at least the eastern half of the Mediterranean, during the second Beis Hamikdash, when a shul, one of the oldest shuls found, is in a Greek island called Delos. Jews came from all over the place to be Ola Rego. We know for sure that they came from Bavel, and in Maseches Tainis, for example, we have the discussion of when you start asking for rain in Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah says that 15 days after Sukkot, they should be sold in a hot press. 15 days, so that the last person has got to reach all the way to the edge of Eretz Yisrael, he's got to reach the Euphrates. It takes him 2 weeks to get to the Euphrates, and we don't want it to rain while he's traveling, because then he'll get caught in the mud and he won't be able to continue. And that's why we wait for asking for rain 2 weeks, and indeed that's the way in Eretz Yisrael. It's no I got a Yom HaZeh. We ask for rain on the 7th of Marcheshvan, 2 weeks after. So we see people are going to Bavel. Now what happens, does this mean that people didn't go farther? Or perhaps it means that in Bavel, we know they need less rain, and they didn't ask for rain right away. So once they already crossed in the hot frost, we can ask for rain there to show, but they don't have to have the rain. Anyway, they're traveling from the hot frost. They're traveling from Egypt, probably coming by ship is much faster for the big Jewish community in Alexandria. They're coming from, as I said, from Greece, etc. The roads leading to but the Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael is concentrated in three places. In the Galil, it's concentrated in Yehuda, Judea, and in Eber HaYarden, the southern part of Eber HaYarden, today Jordan, the Amman area. That's the places where in Eretz Yisrael. So those who live in Eber HaYarden, they'll be coming up to Yerushalayim probably through Yericho. Yericho to Yerushalayim is a one-day travel. These people don't really have to set out that early. People who live in the south, like the Hebron area, also one-day travel, and within 1 day or 1.5 days, they can actually make it to Yerushalayim. People living in the north, this is where it gets a little more complicated. People living in the Galil, if they take a straight line, it would probably take them 2-3 days traveling. But they did not take a straight route. Why did they take a straight route from the Galil to Judah, to Judea? Because the straight route would take them through Shechem. And Shechem in the high Gerizim area, that's where the Kusim, that's where the Samaritans are living. And the Samaritans and the Jews do not get along with each other for the main reason, which is the chosen mountain that is to be chosen to serve Hashem on. So let's go. The Gemara later on has a whole discussion on Daf Gimel. Daf Dalet, yes, on Daf Dalet, correct. The whole discussion with the Kusim, whether they can bring Machtis HaShekel or not. So let's explain the situation with the Kusim a little, because there's a little confusion what they were, what they weren't, were they Jews, were they not Jews. We'll explain the situation with the Kusim and some pictures. We know from the Gemara that the Kusim are often referred to or mentioned on Har Gerizim. They're sitting on Har Gerizim as they are this very day, as we'll soon see in the pictures. The Gemara also says in various places, Gemara in Chulin, Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and that's the last segment on the Hebrew source page, that Rav Shimon Elazar was sent by a mayor to bring wine from the Kusim, and he bumped into an elderly person, and the guy gave him a hint, don't buy wine from the Kusim. So Rav Shimon Elazar came back to Rav Meir. Rav Meir heard that, and Rav Meir was goes there that the Kusim have a din of a guy and he cannot drink the wine. So the Gemara says, why not? What was the problem with the Kusim? Allah Nachma Yitzchok. The Musiona Matulam Beroshah Agrizim Shayyub Demosa. There was a Musiona, an image of a pigeon that they found in Agrizim that they were worshipping. And therefore Rav Meir declared him as Goyim. It was just a myth. Chachamim did not declare him as Goyim. The story of the Kusim goes back, the Pesukim in the end will say from Malachim Beis, if I remember correctly. It talks about when the 10 Shevatim was sent into Golos, the Assyrian king brought a whole bunch of Goyim from Babel, from Kusa, etc., and he settled them in the center of the country in Shamron instead of the 10 Shevatim. And at first they were being devoured by lions. They came to the king and they complained that they can't live here because there are lions. So the king called the 10 Shevatim. He says, you were living there, were there lions? So they said, no. So the king said, how come now they're lions? So the Jews thought, you know, let's pull a good trick. So they said, you know, the reason is very simple. Eretz Yisrael is a very holy land, and it's not so when people are over Avera. So we served Hashem. So Mamela, there were no lions. But these people come from a foreign land. They don't know how to serve Hashem. And therefore, they can't live here. And therefore, they're being eaten up by lions. The king was a little smarter than that. And the king says, okay, we'll solve the problem. And he says, bring me two of your Kohanim. And he sends the Kohanim back. And the Kohanim teach the Kusim how to worship Hashem. And that's how the problem is solved. So from the Pesukim in Malachim, it seems they never were Megayah at all. They're still worshipping their own, they're still worshipping their own God, they're worshipping Hashem, but they're worshipping Him through an intermediary, remaining with their own gods, which for a guy is permissible. In the Gemara we have a big machlokas on the Kusim Geri Emes or Geri Arayos. Did they convert really, or are they Geri Arayos? Did they just convert because they were the fear of the liars, but they didn't really mean to convert? But as Tosfos already points out in Yevamos, in the end it seems that they all did convert. Now, even on the Pesukim, it seems they didn't convert at all, but in the end they did convert. So the Kusim are on the one hand Jews, and here we have the Dvus Yonah and Hagrizim. We have the Mishnah in the Dharam, and the Mishnah in the Dharam says like this, and this is the section before last, Amaral. Hanoda Mishav Zishabas, Asa B'Yishav, Asa B'Kusim. A person who makes another, that he won't have enough from a person who keeps Shabbos, so he's not allowed to have enough from Yisrael, and he's not allowed to have enough from Kusim. Okay, not relevant for us. From those who are only to Yerushalayim, so then he's also in Yisrael, but he's mutter in the Kusim because the Kusim are not always to Yerushalayim. So the Gemara over here says, I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but the Gemara asks, what does it mean Shabbos is Shabbos? Doesn't mean the people who keep Shabbos, so even the Goyim that keep Shabbos. Why is they only also in the Kusim? So the Gemara says, it must mean the Mitzvah of Shabbos, those that are commanded. So the Gemara says, the commanded, so how come when he makes an Edom Ola Yerushalayim, he's mutter b'Kusim? The Kusim are also commanded to go to Yerushalayim. So the Maskana of the Gemara is, it means the person is commanded and keeps the Mitzvah. So when it comes to Shabbos, the Kusim are commanded and they keep the Mitzvah of Shabbos. The Goyim will keep Shabbos and not command. When it comes to Ola Yerushalayim, the Jews are commanded and keep the Mitzvah. Wow! The Kusim are commanded but do not keep the Mitzvah. Why don't they keep the Mitzvah? I think the Rush over there says because they go to high priest. So that was the Gemara saying clearly over here that the Kusim, they are Jews and they're commanded in Mitzvah like Jews, but they don't keep the Mitzvah of going up to Yerushalayim. We have another story in the Gemara in Yoma in the beginning of the fifth parak, also to be very brief, but it talks about Shimon HaTzadik who wanted to greet Alexander the Great. The Kusim wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and Shimon HaTzadik went to intervene, and he saved the Beis HaMikdash. Now Alexander the Great was so impressed by Shimon HaTzadik that he gave him the right to destroy the Mikdash that the Kusim built on Har Gerizim. Tosfos Yeshayahu already asked a question over there. We see that they're worshipping Har Gerizim way back in the days of Shimon HaTzadik, which is at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. How come in the Gemara Chulin it seems they only found this Muziona in the days of Rabbi Meir? That's what Tosfos Yeshayahu asked. And but Rabbi Akiva there and there goes just clearly says he doesn't see what the problem is. The fact that they're worshiping Har Gerizim does not make them being over of this earth. They're worshiping Har Gerizim, they're worshiping Hashem, but on Har Gerizim. That doesn't mean making them worship Avodah Zarah. The Dmus Yonah was an image of Avodah Zarah. Indeed, the Romans, when they captured the country, so they had a pagan temple on Har Gerizim with an image of a bird, and it appears in a coin, in a Roman coin, and it seems that a few of the Kusim also secretly worshipped this Dmus Yonah that the Romans were worshipping. But the Kusim held themselves as Jews and did not worship Avodah Zarah. Their only big difference with, very big difference with Bnei Yisrael was that they worshipped Hashem on Har Gerizim. So how did this whole story happen? The story appears in Sefer Ezra. When Ezra comes back from Babel and the Jews want to build a second Beis HaMikdash, all of a sudden the Kusim come in and intervene and they said, and what's the Taina? They say, Nivnei Machan, we want to build Beis HaMikdash with you. Why? Ki Hashem is our God and we worship him and we've been sacrificing to him from the days of King Yisrael Adon of Ashur who brought us here. And now the Kusim come to Ezra and the seemingly do not mean any trouble, any harm, just the opposite. They want to assist. They say, we're going to help you build Beis HaMikdash. We want to donate money. And it would seem strange that Ezra rejects their whole offer. And but in the end, the pasuk tells us why. Vayiyu merapim yedam ha'arsim v'alim osam livnos. This was a strategy the Kusim used because they really didn't want to build Beis HaMikdash. But instead of fighting it head on, they used a strategy of saying, we're going to build together with you. In other words, we'll donate our share, you donate your share. But in the end, they never really meant to donate their share. And this way, the Beis HaMikdash will not be built. Why did the Kusim take this strategy and not fight it head on? So the Kusim, as we see, they have a din of Jews. But until the Beis HaMikdash is built, and it seems from Sefer Ezra, although the Rambam says otherwise, it seems Sefer Ezra that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, a person could be makav, the Kedusha is batel, and a person could be makav Kabbalas anywhere, as a Bama. And therefore, they were worshipping Hashem on Har Gerizim because it was closer for them than to schlep all the way to Yerushalayim. And there was no problem with that as long as the Beis HaMikdash is not built. But the moment the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, then the Kusim are going to have to make a decision. Are they going to join the Jews in Yerushalayim, or are they not? And if they're not going to join, so then they're going to separate themselves from Klal Yisrael. So this is the decision that they actually took, that they separated themselves from Klal Yisrael, but they tried avoiding it by the whole time by saying, you know, we'll build with you. In other words, they tried preventing the building of the Beis HaMikdash to push off the inevitable. In the end, they actually built their own Mikdash on Har Gerizim, and for that we have a couple pictures here to show you from the Kusim. To show you from the Kusim. Hey, picture number 7 you can bring up is a picture of a staircase. Just a couple words about the excavations on top of our Grizim. Over the last 20-25 years, Professor Yitzhak Magen excavated extensively, 18 seasons, he extensively excavated the top of the mountain on our Grizim, and uncovered the remains of the Kutsi Temple and everything around it, a lot of similarities to that of the Beis HaMikdash, although it is on a smaller scale. Just to mention the amount of bones that were found there, fragments of bones, we're talking about 500,000, talking about 500,000 bones and pieces of bones from kosher animals that you can be marked upon the Mizbech. So pigeons, sheep, goats, oxen, cows, etc., close to 500,000 bones that you could be marked. And what you see over there in the picture is a staircase which led up from the eastern side, which is probably the main entrance, because of course the it faced west, just like the Beis HaMikdash did, just like the other temples did in ancient times. So you see a very impressive remains of the staircase. Even the socket that held the door was found in place. It's not there anymore, you can't see it, but it was held in place. That was probably the main gate. So archaeological evidence shows us that there were two stages to this temple. It was built once in the days of the Persian, under Persian control, which is when the story of Ezra takes place. And then, although it was destroyed, it was rebuilt again in the Hellenistic period, and finally destroyed by the Hashmonai. So the first destruction can be attributed to the days of Shimon HaTzadik, when they destroyed the story which I told you before, and then in the Hellenistic period, they got permission to build it again. And it was finally destroyed, as I told you, by King Yochanan HaRonkonos the Hashmonai. The Kusim caused a lot of trouble for the Jews from then on. The two not only didn't get along, but if a Jew wanted to go from the Galil to Yerushalayim, to walk through the area of Shechem, which was the quickest route, they would stop him. They would do everything to prevent him. And therefore Chazal declared that area to have a din of chutzlars until Maaseret HaAmim. And therefore, if a person wanted to come from the Galil to Yerushalayim, he had to bypass the center of the country, and which can be done one of two ways, either going on the east, which means you had to cross over the Jordan River and go through Eber HaYarden, and then cross back in the area of Yericho and come up to Yerushalayim, or on the west, take a route along the coast, somewhere along where Route 6 is today. The new modern highway goes along very similar to that route which was taken then. But you couldn't take the route straight away from Yudat the Galil. Furthermore, the Gemara tells us in numerous places that Stam Yudav Agol Kishas Chayim Dami, to travel from Yudat the Galil meant the person endangering his life. He couldn't go. It was dangerous and very few people did it. So we see, and the main reason was because of the Kusim we have in the Medrash that certain Amora was going to Yerushalayim, and the Kusi stopped him, and he went past Hargrizim. The Kusi stopped him and says, "Why are you going to that cursed mountain? Why don't you go to this blessed mountain over here?" So he said, "What's blessed about the mountain?" So he says, "This mountain was not drowned during the Mavo." So we didn't know what to answer him. And then his Hamad, the one who led the donkey, says, "Let me answer him." He says, "It says in the Pesuk, all the mountains were covered by the water. So was your mountain one of those? So it must have been covered by water." So even the guy who leads the animal, even he is a big Talmud Chacham. But anyway, the Jews had a lot of problems with the Kusim. If you go on to picture number 8, this is a picture of the Kusim being Ola Regal on HaGrizim. Yours truly took this picture on Sukkot a year and a half ago. They have a calendar similar to ours, but the leap year they usually do one year before us. So this took place in Cheshvan, and this is them being all the regal. They go up to the top of the mountain, the whole community, which today about 600 of them remaining, and 300 Cholon, 300 live on HaGrizim. They go up with the white garments and the Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah is almost the same as the Sefer Torah we have. They worship Hashem. It's not about the Zara. They have a couple of corrections here and there. One of the main corrections, for example, was that it says that you should build a Mizbeach. Hashem commanded Yeshua to build a Mizbeach on Har Abel and put up stones and whatever, and they moved it to Har Grizim. You should build it on Har Grizim. So So when the excavation showed the Mizbech was found in Har Ebal, that was a big problem for the Kusim. They also put into Esar Sadibra that you should build the Beis HaMikdash on Har Grizim. This very day, they are Makav Korban Pesach on Har Grizim. We spoke about that, Har Pesachim, a while ago. And they still exist. You can see them over there, but it's the same Sefer Torah, we have, except that's written in the ancient Hebrew script. So the Kusim, they are the troublemakers, and therefore Chachamim are saying that you cannot take the stuff from them because they don't really mean, they don't really intend to contribute to the Beis HaMikdash. They just want you to rely on them, and then one day they'll stop, and that's it, and you'll be stuck and be left without money. Okay. How was the Machzis HaShekel brought? It's very simple, but I'm still saying this because everyone who visited Yerushalayim and goes to the Southern Wall excavations and to the Davidson Center and sees the movies over there gets this impression that a person traveled in order to bring his Machzis HaShekel. He traveled all the way from whatever it is, from the Galil neighbor Yaden. He came with a few hundred plutotes in his pocket. And then he comes to Yerushalayim, and there he finds a money changer, and the money changer takes the putot, and he switches it into a silver coin of a half a shekel, and then the guy takes the half a shekel, and gives it as he enters the Mikdash, the way it's even shown in the movie, it's like an entrance fee. Without that, a person is not allowed in. Although I did have a lengthy talk with the archaeologist to design most of the stuff, I didn't have a chance to speak to him about this gross error, which is very incorrect. As we'll see how many mistakes can be made in one Hollywood movie. But if we go, for example, to the beginning of the second parak, Davhei of an Aleph, Metzaber Shkolim and Darkonis May Masir Yaderach. You combine Shkolim into Darkonis, which are bigger coins, Darkomonim, which was a Persian coin and later a Greek coin. They even used drachmas till a few years ago, they switched to the euro. If they lost their derech, in other words, instead of schlepping small silver coins which can reach large sizes, so you can make it into, consolidate it into big coins which can even be gold coins. And then the Mishnah goes on. The people from a city who sent a shekel, on the way, it got stolen or got lost. So then it depends on what stage, if it's before Trumas HaLishko or after, and how they have to repay it. But anyway, it's clear that in order to send the Machzis HaShekel, people, not every individual came and brought his own Machzis HaShekel to Shalai. There's no Aliyah Regal on Echad Barda. It's a crazy thought. The people collected it, and then they found a Shliach, and the Shliach went and brought it to Shalayim, and as we see from numerous places. That the fact that they found a few hundred putot in a store outside the Harabai doesn't prove anything. First of all, usually what you find is a putot because the silver coins were looted by the soldiers, so just because you don't find silver coins doesn't mean anything. Secondly, if there is one thing that you are required to bring putot to Shalayim, that's Ma'aseh Sheni. When you come with Ma'aseh Sheni, you're not supposed to bring only large bills, because you might come to Yerushalayim and not find someone to cash the large bills and one of what to eat. So for that, you're mechuyav to bring frutas to Yerushalayim. That is correct. But for Machzis HaShekel, the people didn't bring it. They sent it by Shulich, as we see clearly over here. And for that, I have a very interesting picture. Let's look at, first of all, picture number three. It's bad quality picture. I apologize. Taken from... I think last week this was discussed, so I'm really not going to go into this in depth, what the Machzis HaShekel looked like, etc. These are pictures of a shekel, a Machzis HaShekel, and a quarter of a shekel, and the Machzis HaShekel and the shekel looked alike, except on the Machzis HaShekel it said Machzis HaShekel as opposed to the shekel where it says shekel Yisrael. This was taken in the Harris Museum. This picture was taken in the Harris Museum in Tel Aviv. And these are coins that were minted by the Jews right during the great revolt against the Romans. Meaning, the last 4 or 5 years of the Beis HaMikdash, these were the coins, and these are called in the Sefta, Shkolim Yerushalmiim, perhaps. Before that, what was used was Shekel Tzuri. This was all discussed last week, so I'm really not going into that. So go on to picture number four. And picture number four is a picture of a hoard of shekel tzuri and half shekel tzuris. A total that were found in this hoard, we're talking about 6,000 coins. 6,000 coins. This is found in the Carmel, in a near a village called Josefa, near Haifa. Today, this is sitting in the Haaretz Museum in Tel Aviv. And there's a good chance that this collection of coins was indeed money that was meant to go to Yerushalayim for the Machzis HaShekel. And for some reason, it didn't make it, either because of the war, or it could have been any other reason. We really have no idea. But there's a good chance that this was... and they also found, by the way... Dinarim, I'm not sure if golden dinarim, but I assume I would have to find out. Which we see in the mission, Mitzav Mishkol Medarkonos, you can put the money into coins. A good chance that this was indeed from the Machzis HaShekel. The Machzis HaShekel, again, was gathered, collected, and then sent by a shliach to take it to Yerushalayim. Not every individual came, it's inconceivable, it's... again, I have no idea where they got that Hollywood idea in the movie over there in the Davidson Center, in the Summer Excavations, but it's definitely wrong. How long did it take? So that's a good question. We know, as I said, to get to the Har Pras to Yerushalayim, we're talking about 2 weeks, which means that if a person set out from, from the Har Pras, you got to send the shekel from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it can make it in time. It can make it in time to Yerushalayim on time for the Korban Pesach. Why is that important? Because it's got to start actually 2 weeks before that, so that it makes it for the Trumas Alishka Be'echa Benisa. Because the Shlosha Prokem Trumas Alishka, the Trumas Alishka is taken three times. One is taken 2 weeks before Pesach, and then before Sateras and before Sachak. And the Mishnah tells us later on that before Pesach was for the close countries, so they made it to Yerushalayim by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and the nearby countries, the perimeter, made it in time for 2 weeks before Shavuos, which is about where we are today, and the rest, Madai and Bavel, only made it for the third, which was in the time of Sukkot, which means it didn't make it in the time for Pros Haktaris. It didn't make it in time, which means we're talking about approximately 2 months. It's still not enough for it to come from Bavel, or definitely not from Madai. That would give us an idea. Now the perimeter, which it says which is later on, which across the terrace, some other person says Amunimov. I tend to disagree. Amunimov is close enough so that it can make it even for the first round. This is the Mishnah here, and that's Zayin number base. A Bishlosha Prokem, Bashan Thomas Alishka, before the Pesach, before the Teres, before the Chag, 3 times you take the Thomas Alishka, 2 weeks before Pesach, 2 weeks before Shavuos, and 2 weeks before Sukkot. And then the Mishnah later on tells us that the different coins, Thomas Arishona, has the Mishnah, now tell some of the Aleph, Thomas Arishona, Shem Eretz Yisrael. The first one was for all the people from Eretz Yisrael, and the second was the Korachon and Mekofono, the countries that were next to Eretz Yisrael, and the third was for Bavel and Madai, and the faraway countries. So I don't know, Amunimov probably could make it on time. I assume I'm talking about near Eretz Yisrael, it could be in Egypt or something like that, not as far as Bavel. But anyway, the scroll are more collected, as we saw this very interesting hoard that we saw in the picture. Again, a good possibility that was a hoard that was meant for Machzis HaShekel. A couple things about mikvahs. It says that he set up the mikvahs. I have two pictures of mikvahs. This is also a completion of the shiur we gave on Antara in Pesachim. So I owe it to you. First of all, we have two pictures over here. Picture number 5 is a mikvah, and a very interesting mikvah. And picture number 6 is the outside of the mikvah. So I want to tell you why I took the picture of this mikvah, and I mentioned to you, people are coming to Yerushalayim. The main road from the south is a road that comes from Hebron, coming past Beit Lechem into Yerushalayim. Stretches of this road have been found from the days of the second Beit Hamikdash, and later on the Romans repaved this road, and there's even a Roman milestone there. In the Gush Etzion area, there's even a sign, Patriarch's Way, Derech Avot, and that's probably the road that Avraham Avinu took, Yitzchak and Yaakov, etc. And this road was also the road that the Olei Regel took on the way to Yerushalayim. So off the road, there's a beautiful mikvah over here, which you see in the two pictures. And I took these pictures here on Pesach. You see that there was water in it because it rained from the winter. And I assumed that if the mikvah was actually functioning, there would be much more water in there because they would direct the water into there so that it would last for a longer time. This mikvah, as I said, is near the road. We know from the archaeological artifacts around it that it dates back to the second second Beit HaMikdash, but there was no Yishuv, no settlement nearby. And therefore, logic dictates that this was meant to be on the road for people who are all irregular, that they should be toggled in this mikvah, because it's not, again, it's not near any no population nearby. Another interesting thing is that we see over here in picture number 6, we see the entrance, two entrances. And that is Mishnah later on towards the end of Shkolim. We spoke about this on a Mishnah Chafal of Amad Aleph in Shkolim. Call a Kelim and Mitzvah and Yerushalayim. The Kelim and Mitzvah and Yerushalayim, the Chirida of Beis HaTevilah, Tamei. If they're found on the way into the Beis HaTevilah, then they're Tamei. V'derech Aliyah, if they found the way out to Orim, Shelo, Kiridos and Aliyosah. Because they don't go into the Mikvah the same way they go out. In other words, if a person finds a kli on the Erev Pesach, he finds a knife, and he wants to know if it's Torah or not, so it depends where he found it. If he found it at the entrance of the mikvah, so another guy dropped it before he went into the mikvah, and therefore it's Torah. But if he found it on the way out, so another guy dropped it after he already told, but then it's Torah. So we see from here that there are one way in and one way out to the mikvah, and indeed many mikvahs in Yerushalayim were found without separation along the staircase, one way in, one way out. The mikvah you see over here in the picture is the nicest separation to date that's been found between the entrance and the exit, with a solid wall separating the two. That's the nicest one that's found, and again, that's found on a road. Nearby there, by the way, there is a Roman milestone. I don't have a picture of it, sorry. There's a Roman milestone showing that this is a main road. I don't know, the inscription usually would say how many miles to go, whatever direction. Each mile, the Romans set up a network of roads in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about 1,000 miles of roads. And there's one Roman milestone which has been restored over there on the road, so we know that this was the main road from the Roman period. We can assume that it was the main road from the second Beis HaMikdash and from the first. To date, archaeologically speaking, in Eretz Yisrael, they've yet to find any road that they can pinpoint and say it dates back to the first Beis HaMikdash. We do have, again, Roman roads, and we assume the Roman roads were built along what were earlier roads, and they widened them and they paved them, etc. So that's why we don't find the early remains. Since we have a few more minutes, just want to go to the Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Gemara talks about Hefker Bezdin and Hefker, and the Gemara talks about that if a person has a field of Hefker, then it's part of an Amisus. Now the Gears over here is lacking compared to the Gears in Yerushalmi in Maseches Peah. And the Gears in Maseches Peah, the discussion is Hefker Drabonon part of a Maisa or not? In other words, if Rabbanan Amavka things, now if a person is Mavka himself, fine. But what happens if Rabbanan Amavka? Hefker Bezdin Hefker. So what happens if Rabbanan Amavka? Is it also part of an Amisus or not? That's the discussion in the Yerushalmi and Peah, and the Yerushalmi brings this. Rabbi Yonatan by Yitzchak Baruch Hashem lo menado. In ma'abnas Hashana lo b'shvius lo b'matzishvius. You don't make a leap year. This is what we spoke about before. The leap year was done arbitrarily then, the way Bereshit felt it. You don't make the leap year in Shavuos, because in Shavuos people aren't planting, so they have very little to eat. Food is scarce. You don't want to extend the year with another month. And that Motzei Shavuos. Why? Because the new grain can only be eaten from the Korban Omer, which is on the second day of Pesach. So if you're going to add an extra order, that means people are going to have to wait another month. However, they may brew a Harez Mubaz, but Bezdin nonetheless declared Shavuos a Nibayar, a Mubaz, so then B'diavad, it is a leap year. So Yishami says, V'chodesh Echot Shemot Sif Lavotim Maisos. Now, since the Bezdin added that extra year, so that year it's also Hefker, the progress in Shemitah is also Hefker, and it's also Potem and Amaisos. So you see that when Rabbanan Amavkeh something, it's also Potem and Amaisos. That's the proof that the Yerushalmi brings. So we have a very interesting shaila, which the Minchas Chinuch already raised, but the truth of the matter is, long before the Minchas Chinuch, it's a machlokas. What is the explanation in Shemitah? And now that we read in the Torah yesterday, how does it work, Shemitah? Does it work that the Torah declared your field to be Hefker, or the Torah gives the individual a mitzvah to be mafka the field? And the simple mafkamina is what happens if a person is not mafka his field. This guy, he doesn't want to be mafka the mitzvah of the Torah. He's not mafka his field. Can you go in and take the produce against his will? Or not? So if the Torah is mafka the field, So then the Torah is mafkir. So then it's efker. Just because he doesn't listen to the Torah, that doesn't prohibit you from taking the produce. But if the Torah gave him a mitzvah to be mafkir, so if he's not mekayim the mitzvah and he wasn't mafkir, so it's not efker. So he's over an isser, but that doesn't give you permission to take it. So that's the whole discussion. I told him, Chas Chinuch already asked the question to Gersaris in the Ran and the Zoyim, how is Gersaris in the Gemara over there, and the fourth verse, Aranami Afkara. But anyway, the Raya from this Gemara, clearly, from this Yerushalmi, we see that it's actually Afkata de Malka, that the Torah is Mafka. Because, again, what does Yerushalmi prove? Yerushalmi says the fact that Chachamim added on another month, and a month is Pata from Meiser. So you see that if Rabbanan are Mafka, something is Pata from Meiser. If the Dinei Shemitah is on the Gavra, if the Dinei Shemitah is that the individual has a mitzvah to be mafkir, so then if Chachamim had an extra month, they're not being mafkir anything. They're just telling you, you have to be mafkir. So then what's the Gemara's Raya? So if the Yerushalmi brings a Raya, that Chachamim Amalkis Putman Meiser must see that the Yerushalmi holds clearly that when they declared Shemitah, it's automatically hefker. And it's automatically hefker. When they add a month, that month is also automatically hefker. And therefore, you see from the fact that it's automatically hefker when Rabbanon do it, that hefker Rabbanon is also part of Ramayisa. So this is a very strong raya, and indeed the Chazon Ish in Shviya says on this v'raya alimtahi. He says this is a very stark raya, that indeed it's afkata de malka, and it's not on the individual. Even if the individual is not mafkir, the Torah is mafkir on its own. It's one more thing. We have one more picture here, which is here for a reason, and that's picture number 10. Probably this probably was taken. This picture was taken right next to the mikvah, and this was taken on Pesach, second, third day of Pesach, and this is season of the year when the Korban Omer is carved and the Korban Omer is barley, and the barley's got to ripen to some extent. Here it's not exactly ripe, but indeed the Karoim and the Kutsim who follow, when they make a leap year today, they go out and see what the situation is with the barley. If the barley is ripe, they don't have to make a leap year. If the barley is not ripe, they'll make a leap year, and that's probably what they'll do next year, and come and see if the barley is not ripe enough, and probably make a leap year, even though we're going to make it the year afterwards. That's what they still do. There's even the documents in the Cairo Gniza from 1,000 years ago of how they were checking the whole country, and maybe in one place they found ripe barley, and then Tsoar, which was like the hottest place, but the rest they didn't find, and they said they definitely have to make a leap year. But anyway, these are pictures. We know the Omer in Yerushalayim was the barley came from Nachal Kidron just outside Yerushalayim. That's where Beis Mikla was. That's where they took it. I have pictures of that too, but not here. And to show again that season, the season of the Omer and the Shomer Tzvich and Shabbat Shvi'is, which the Gemara talks about, that they take the money from Jerusalem Lishka on a year, like Shemitah, so you can't plant anything. But this is the wild barley that grows. This is what they would have to guard in order to make sure the people don't pick it themselves, so that they have enough Omer for the Korban Omer.